Robin welcomed Eastlake. This is a church for everyone. It doesn't matter if you're very religious or if you're not religious at all. It doesn't matter if you like church or you're not so sure. And it doesn't matter if you have a past. You're welcome here. This is a church for everyone. And in this series, today we're going to look at a person in the Bible, none other than Moses. And Moses is an Israelite, a Jewish person, that lives with an adopted family in Egypt. And he knows something about time management. It's way, way back in the day. And Moses is this guy that it's like he has four different lives. He lives with this very wealthy, powerful family. He's adopted. He's Jewish. They're Egyptian. And it's the Pharaoh. So the royal family, he's like a king of Egypt. And so Moses has a lot of power when he's growing up. He's that kid on the block that has all the money. And everybody likes at school and has all the power. Moses has the power to change circumstances to meet how he wants his life to go. And maybe you have someone at work like that, your boss, and they're working, and all of a sudden they get behind. So they just change the schedule to meet how they want it to be, and they screw up everybody else's schedule. Or you have somebody in your family like that, and they just change the time of the dinner to meet how they want it to go, to meet their schedule, and it screws up everybody else's life. But they do it because they have the power to do it, and that's Moses. He's like that. Of course, that causes an attitude that can get us a little off base, because when I believe that it's okay to change circumstances, to have everything turn out like I want, I become insensitive to how it impacts other people. I just get used to the fact that it's okay to change everything whenever I want to get things how I want them to be in my life. And Moses, one day, he's a Jewish orphan boy, and he sees one of the Jewish slaves. All the Jews are slaves there, being mistreated by this Egyptian taskmaster, and he's enraged by it, and he attacks the Egyptian. He must have been pretty tough, because he kills him with his bare hands and buries him in a shallow grave. Kind of a gruesome part of the Bible. But it's just a picture of how far it can go when I believe it's okay to change my circumstances, to have my life turn out like I want to, and soon I don't see the impact on anyone, and that's how far it can go. You maybe don't kill anybody, but you can kill the life in another person. Because you just change things whenever you need to, and I change things whenever I need to, and that's Moses. And then, of course, the authorities find out, so now Moses is on the run, he's on the lam, he leaves with just the shirt on his back, and he goes into another phase of his life, in his like early 20s, he has the phase where he doesn't have any power. He's a shepherd, taking care of sheep. It's that time in your life when it goes really, really super slow. Have you ever just wondered, is my life going anywhere? Is this gonna end up anywhere where I want it to end up? That's Moses. He goes from all this power. I control everything. Rah, 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 rah. And now he's just like, he's a shepherd taking care of these sheep, and sheep's crap a lot. He has to clean all that up all the time. Is my life going anywhere at all? It just feels like I'm just always cleaning up stuff. That's Moses. And then God shows up again and says, Moses, I'm going to give you the power to free all of the slaves that are in Egypt, all the Jewish people. You're going to be the person that frees them all. So now Moses comes back and he has all the power, and God gives him these abilities to do all these different miracles, and he pulls it off. Is there anything in your life you dream about and you think, I really would like to do that, I'd really like to do that, but you say to yourself, I'll never pull that off. Moses does. He gets to be the NFL quarterback or the ballerina or whatever your dream is. He's that guy. Now he's got all the power again. And as they're leaving Egypt, God tells them, he says, now we're going to go to a land that I'm going to give you. It's called the Promised Land. We're going to go there, and you're going to set everything up, and I'm going to be your God. You'll be my people, and Moses is the leader. And to make a long story short, the people decide, well, now that we're free and we can do whatever we want, we're going to. We're not going to do what you want us to do, God. Anytime you decide you're going to do something different than God has asked you to do, be prepared for a long cut, not a shortcut. And it gets very delayed before they get to the promised land. Now, understand something. God always has hope for us. So he doesn't take the promise away. Oh, no, you're going to be bad, then you don't get it. No, but he says, I'm going to have to delay. Because our relationship is more important than the promise that I've made to you. So I'll have to delay it. It takes him 40 years to clean up the mess. Do you know anybody that's in the middle of a mess because of a choice they made? Why don't you be the one this week that goes to him and say, hey, listen, God's still in there with you. He wants you to have it. It's not like you ruined everything. This mess won't go on forever. And Moses is in one of those times again in his life where he's like, gosh, is my life going? I'm just kind of setting it up today because he writes this little like a prayer in the Bible that we're going to read today. And I just wanted you to know, Moses has some perspective on time. He understands some things about time. And here's what he says. It's the big idea. You can write it in your notes. How I spend my time is how I spend my life. The book of Psalms, most of those are written by King David, who's famous for killing a giant. But there's one psalm, a little prayer in there on time management that Moses wrote. We're going to read it today. We'll just go verse by verse. It's in your notes. Here it is right here. Lord, you've been our dwelling place throughout all generations. Before the mountains were born, or you brought forth the whole world from everlasting to everlasting, circle that, you are God. So here's what Moses is saying. Somewhere between the bookends of everlasting and everlasting is my life. Here's what Moses is saying to you and to me today. My life fits in pretty well with God. It fits in nicely. Because he's from everlasting to everlasting, there's plenty of space for me to live with God. And maybe you believe this lie, God would never accept the way I live. I could never darken the doors of church. They would never want, because the way I live, from everlasting to everlasting, everybody here today can find a place to fit in with God. Lots of room with God. Lots of place with God. Lots of patience with God. Lots of time to process with God. You can bring him your life, whatever it looks like, and there's room for you. So Moses, he says, the first thing you have to understand about God, if you're going to understand anything about how he sees time, there's time enough for you and me, from everlasting to everlasting. And then this next verse, you turn people back to dust, saying, return to dust, you mortals. Sounds like it's out of the Lord of the Rings. You shall not pass. It's like a... But this is Moses talking. And I know it's a little offensive to us, because like, how dare you call me dust, God? That's not very nice. I put this makeup on. It took me an hour this morning. Not dust. Here's all that he's saying. He's saying that before I arrived, God was here. And God will be here after I'm gone. That's all he's saying. He's saying, God has perspective that's far greater than mine. It's far-reaching. He can see a lot more than I can see. God can. Let's keep reading. A thousand years in your sight are like a day that has just gone by, or like a watch in the night. Now, a watch in the night is 3 hours. So now Moses is going to like tell you about this perspective. He says, 8,736,000 hours is like compared to 3 with God. So our perspective is like 3 hours. We see our life and like, oh my God, the transmission's out in my truck. 3 hours. God's got the perspective of someone that's got 8,736,000 hours. All Moses is saying is he's saying, God's really big and we're not. He can see everything. He's saying that there's nothing that has happened in your past that got by him. Nothing's going to approach you in the future that's going to catch him by surprise. Oh, gosh, I didn't know that was coming. It's going to ruin my reputation as God that knows all. He sees it all. He's been in it all. Maybe you've fallen for that trick before. I do all the time. Monday at like 3 o'clock, I'm having a pretty good day. I haven't done too much sinning that day, and I'm doing all right. So I feel good about asking God for help. Oh, God, please help me get the sermon ready and stuff. I'm doing a job. I feel pretty good about that. But then on Wednesday, I do a big stupid sin, and I can't approach God. And it never even occurs to me that on Monday, when I felt so good, and of course you like me because I'm a good boy, that he knew what I was going to do on Wednesday then. Because from everlasting to everlasting, 8,736,000 hours compared to 3, he is the Lord. He's got perspective. He can see things. Let's keep reading. Yet you sweep people away in the sleep of death, Moses talking. They are like the new grass in the morning. It springs up new, but in the evening it's dry and withered. Now he's talking about you and me. He's saying, man, stuff can sneak up on you fast in this world. You think everything is so great. And all of a sudden it starts to wither and get old. And so you get something else new and it starts to wither and get old. He's talking about things can run into us very, very quickly. And life does get difficult when the hard times arrive. And they just arrive in an instant. When's the last time you felt bushwhacked? Ambushed? It's like, wait a second. I thought I had all these ducks in a row. What are they doing flying around? They just suddenly, there it is. And Moses continues, our days may come to 70 years or 80 if our strength endures, yet the best of them are but trouble and sorrow, for they quickly pass and we fly away. It's the old gospel song that they used to sing, we fly away. Amen. And Moses, you know, he says, I know what it's like to be sad for a long time and wonder if life is ever going to change. Because I know what that's like. I know what it's like to want things to get better and I wonder if they ever will. I know what it's like to have sorrow and trouble that just keeps going. And I say, this is never. I don't know if it'll ever change. He's saying, I know what it is to be with God and wonder, God, are you ever going to change it? Are you ever going to make it better? It's the times in our life when we think this thought, I'm stuck here. This is never changing. And there's a clip I want you to see that it's from the popular show Parenthood. It kind of looks like this right here. Check this out.
Okay, let's take a break.
Dad, come on, we've got so much crap to pack up. I don't have time for a break.
Let's take a break. I want to talk to you about what happened the other night.
Well, I don't want to talk about what happened.
Well, I know you don't want to talk about what happened. I know it's hard to talk about your feelings.
Who are you?
I'm not sure.
Dad, come on, that guy was a jackass, right? I mean, he said things he shouldn't have and, you know, paid the price. I think anybody would have punched that guy.
Yeah. Adam?
What?
Ever since you were a little boy, you've always managed to be in control. It astounded me. And I so admired you for that. And I still do.
I guess somebody had to be in control, right? I mean, I was just trying to balance you out, you know, because you were just explosive all the time. I mean, you'd even yell at a stranger. Remember that waitress who spilled the soup in your lap? You know, or when Crosby broke those black chess pieces made out of onyx, you know, you were so enraged about. Or when Sarah and Seth came home stoned at 3 a.m. from that concert. I mean, you went berserk on that guy. So I was just trying not to be like you, so the fact that you admire that is pretty funny. now I'm the angry guy, you know. Now I'm angry at everything, and I'm angry that I had to fire people at work because of the economy, because I work for a jackass who's been promising me for 15 years that he's going to, you know, give me part ownership of the company, and he never will. You know, I'm pissed off that I have to hold Sarah's hand, that she can't go and find a job on her own. You know, I'm pissed off I can't do more for my son. I'm pissed off that he has Asperger's. I'm pissed off that you admire me for being in control, because I can't do anything about it. I can't do anything about any of it. I can't save those people's jobs. I can't make my kid not have Asperger's. I can't keep some asshole from calling him a retard in the supermarket. So what good does it do me to control my feelings? And honestly, it felt good when I hit that guy. It felt good not to be in control. I'm just angry all the time. And I don't know what I'm supposed to do about it. You know, I can't go around punching people in supermarkets.
Secret weapon today. It's a red edition Red Bull. And I'd like to say that every single day I just know Jesus has my back, but a lot of times I reach for this. Because I'm like, I gotta stay in control, man. I gotta keep this thing going. And I was thinking about this can today. I thought, you know, I think a lot of times it's easy to be just like this can. It looks powerful and it's hopeful and you know, it gives you wings, you know, Red Bull. But when the hits come, it's like going like this. And you just shake it up and you shake it up, and I can't control this, and some asshole does something to my family, and something happens to work, and it just shakes and shakes and shakes and shakes and shakes and shakes. And then, but if everybody looks at us, we look like that. Because it's so important to seem calm and in control and having everything together. We look like everything is fine until somebody walks up and accidentally opens it and explodes on them. Or I come home from work, or you come home from work, and you get there and everybody scatters. Someone told me at work this week that when their dad arrives home from work, that all the kids scatter into their bedrooms and hide because they know he's going to be angry and burned out and stressed. And they don't want to pop the top on it. Because it's so important that we look like we're in control. It's so important to feel like we have it all together. But on the inside, listen, we live from the inside. I experience my life on the inside. Everybody else gets to look on the outside. Good for them. But I experience my life on the inside. And man, when you explode on the wrong person, where you can't keep it down anymore. That's what Moses is talking about. He's talking about in this life that we live. And wouldn't it be nice if when that was going on, we really could believe Jesus has got my back? When you're churning on the outside like crazy, maybe the outside looks just fine, but the inside, you're just churning because of the pressure. Wouldn't it be great if just the thought just flew in, wait a second, Jesus has got my back. God has got my back. And I know it's easy sometimes to say, oh, Robin, but you don't know what I've done. You don't know the secret life that I have hiding. You don't know the things that I've done to other people. Robin, you don't know any of that stuff. But what if it could just cut right through it? The Lord could say, I've got your back. Jesus has your back. And Moses, he continues He says, if only if we knew the power of your anger, your wrath is as great as the fear that is due you. It seems a little odd, but here's what that actually means. Look on the in your outline and write in the very first one. If we could see God as he is, we would trust him, that he has my back, that he's there for me. And maybe if I believed that God had my back, I wouldn't feel like I had to put on a show. I wouldn't feel like I have to look strong and perfect and like I've got it all. Maybe if I really could see God as he is. We got the Super Bowl coming up next weekend. I don't know, I'm a football fan, so I watched the games this last week, and that Seattle-Green Bay game was crazy. And I'm not trying to do a Seahawks commercial or anything, but their quarterback, Russell Williams, is a Christ follower. He follows Jesus. He's been really open about that. Lots of different types of Christians. Man, did he get some controversy this last week. I don't know if you've seen it. It's been all over the place. Because when they interviewed him at the end, he was so overcome with emotion at the end of the game because it was crazy. They came back, a crazy thing, and Seattle won. And then, so some of the players that are Christ followers, they get together before anything happens, and they kneel down in the center of the field, and they say a prayer of thanks. And Russell Wilson, probably the emotions of the game, but everything else, he's walking with Jesus, is a grown man. He's crying his eyes out. It's all on TV. There's nowhere to hide from it. And they bring him, always want the quarterback, right? And they're interviewing him. He's still crying. And he said something as they started interviewing him. He said, God is good. And man, did he take a lot of crap for saying that in the news and the media. And everybody took a shot at him. He's like, how dare you say something like that? And don't you know the world we live in and all this? And, you know, they really hit him pretty hard. And then he said this. They asked him a question. They asked him something about, why he thought the game turned out like he did. And I want to ask you this question. Who is your audience every day? Like if your life was on stage and you were performing, who do you see out in the audience? Who would be clapping for you? Whose review do you care most about? Who's watching your life? Is it your parents or your dad or your mom or your brother? Someone at work? Maybe it's you. But it's like the one person, like, who is your audience? And so, you know, here's Russell Wilson, and they asked him a question about why do you think it turned out that way? Here's what he said. He says, oh, that's God setting it up to make it so dramatic, so rewarding and special. So Russell Wilson, Christ follower, he says that. Oh, my goodness, the 4th of July goes on everywhere. How could anybody say that? Listen to what one writer said. This is in the news. I didn't have any feeling whatsoever about Russell Wilson 48 hours ago, but now I hate his stinking guts. Hate everything about him. It all irks me. This God nonsense is preposterous. Oh, God felt like watching a good game, Russ? Was he at Buffalo Wings and decided to trigger a glare on bounce the ball off of Boswick's face mask? That's the guy that missed the onside kick. Because God was in the mood for a little overtime? Shut up, you idiot. God doesn't give a crap about you. I hate anyone who pretends there's some good little Christian and praises God at the end of the game. You think the omnipresent being you believe in, who drives clouds and farts lightning, sorry, I didn't write this. Go get this guy. Farts lightning, was so bored that he spent his Sunday making you throw interception for drama's sake? What a narcissistic little jerk. Now I read it. I'm not making a point about Russell Wilson because I don't know how God decides who wins and who doesn't. I have enough time sorting that out in my own life. Like a salesman, I don't know how that works. I don't know who he's picking this weekend. Hope it's the Seahawks, but who knows. But, yeah, I mean, I'm not making a point about that. What I'm making a point about is what if, listen now, what if Russell Wilson has an audience of one? And it just sort of naturally came out that way. That's who he performs for. What if the 50, 60,000 fans and all the players and coaches and everybody else, what if he follows Jesus? Just a what if his audience is Jesus? Because he knows Jesus has his back. And when they ask him a question, it just came out. He's just like, well, I just think God is involved in my life. Is that so bad? What if he's wrong? But is it so bad? I heard someone say one time, if they put you on trial for following Jesus, would there be enough evidence to convict you? And I was like, what if it was just that? What if it was just that? Just if I could see God as he is. What if it was just that? Now, then a second thing, right in your notes, what if we could see ourselves as God sees us? We would spend our time wisely. We'd spend our time wisely if we could see how God sees us. And I know that that's where you come back to the idea, but Robin, you don't know anything about my past. And it is difficult sometimes because we say to ourselves, I already made the bad choice. Do you know that Jesus can re-engineer past choices that you made, that they were initially going to cause something bad, and he can re-engineer them so they actually can cause something good? It's called redemption. But I already got divorced. God's bigger than that. But Robin, I already quit in my job. God's bigger than that. Can re-engineer them. And what Moses is saying is, if we could see ourselves like God sees us, do you know the Bible says that you are the apple of God's eye? Listen to this. A woman was dying of AIDS and a priest was summoned. He attempted to comfort her to no avail. I'm lost, she said. I've ruined my life and every life around me. I'm going painfully to hell. There is no hope for me. The priest saw a famed picture of a pretty girl on the dresser. Who's that, he asked. The woman brightened. She's my daughter, the one good thing in my life. And would you help her if she was in trouble, said the priest, or if she made a mistake? Would you forgive her? Would you still love her? Of course I would, the woman said. I would do anything for her. I love her. How could you ask me that question? Because I wanted you to know, said the priest, that God has a picture of you on his dresser. He has your back. Your past is something that he can redeem. There's no decision that you've made that he can't cause and squeeze some good out of it. And we'd spend our time much differently if we could see ourselves like God sees us. I think what happens sometimes in our life, and I want you to see these crazy little funny mirrors. I brought these little mirrors in. You ever been to the fun house and seen those things? You know, you look in the mirror and everything is so distorted. You know, and you know, you kind of know what you look like, but then you look in the mirror and you see something like that. I think sometimes when we look at ourselves, we see a distortion. We see all the bad things that we've done. We see everything that we've done wrong and we just hang our head. Or we see the things that have been done wrong to us and we turn our head. And we have like a very distorted view of ourselves. I mean, who'd want to be with that person? And yet God says, you're the apple of my eye. From time to time, to get an accurate view of yourself, you have to allow God to show you how he feels about you. You have to let God show you what he thinks about you. You have to allow the Lord to give you a picture of yourself from his perspective. And if you do, you spend your time much differently. Now, to finish today, I want to fast forward our lives, because no one's really that old in here. So I'm going to kind of fast forward to the end, or just like if we were facing the end of our life. There's a woman, and what she does is she spends time with people during the last 2 weeks of their life. She's Australian. Her name is Bronnie Ware. She wrote a book about it. The last 2 weeks of their life, she's a caregiver. She comes in and she spends time with them. And she wrote this book about the regrets that people talk about. And she listed the top two regrets that people have at the end of their life. This is like what she has seen being with these people in these last 2 weeks. And the first one is, write it in your notes, I wish I hadn't worked so hard. Jim Valvano passed away quite some time ago of cancer. He led the North Carolina State to the national championship in basketball, and here's what he said when he got cancer. Throughout his colorful coaching career, he had been obsessed with the game and with winning, but years later, stricken with cancer, he came to realize, you get sick and you say to yourself, sports means nothing. and that feels terrible. Because he had spent little time with his wife and children, he confessed, I figured I'd have 20 years in the big time. Who knows? Maybe win 3 national titles, and I'd pack it in at 53 or 54 years old. I was going to make it all up to them. I was. All that time I've been away. It sounds so silly now. And I'm not guilt-tripping. I'm warning. We all can lean towards workaholism. Just everything goes into our job and accomplishment. Please, somewhere in your notes, write this down. Because it can start early in school, too, by the way. If you don't have a 4.67 zillion now, they think you're a dumbbell. I mean, you know, write this down. Relationships matter more than accomplishment. Oh, but I'm going to call my brother. I'm going to. Next week I'll call him. We live like we have unlimited time. I'll go to the next parent-teacher conference. Next week, my wife and I will go on a date. We live like we have unlimited time, and we don't have unlimited time. We do not. Time is limited. And Bonnie Ware says this, this came from every male patient that I nursed. They missed their children's youth and their partner's companionship. Woman also spoke of this regret. But it's mostly from older generation. Many of the female patients had not been breadwinners. All of the men I nursed deeply regretted spending so much of their lives on the treadmill of work existence. All of them. And so it's just a wake-up call today as we're talking about time. Relationships are more important than accomplishment. Now, the second regret. I wish I had the courage to live a life true to myself, not the life others expected of me. I think what's happening here is people are saying, I don't know that if I ever really figured out why I was here. I don't know if I ever really grasped what my life was supposed to be all about. Time just kept whizzing by, new in the morning and withered by night and sorrow piling up. It's like, I never really felt, what they're saying, last 2 weeks of their life, I don't know if I ever got it. I don't know if I ever was able to really say, yeah, I get who I am and I get where I'm at and I get why I'm here. This is Bronnie Ware. This was the most common regret of all. When people realized their life was almost over and looked back clearly on it, it was easy to see how many dreams had gone unfulfilled. Most people had not honored even half their dreams and had to die knowing that it was due to choices they had made or not made. Health brings a freedom very few realize until they no longer have it. So I thought what we could do today is just sort of fast forward. We're not with Bronnie Ware. This isn't the last 2 weeks of our life. But boy, we could sure learn from the wisdom. We could miss an avoidable regret. If we could just remember relationships are far more important than accomplishment. And if we could just remember, oh, why am I here? I'm here to be with Jesus, the one that loves me and has me as the apple of his eye and has my back. Now that's the last thing on the bottom line. If we number our days, we can spend our time without regrets. And I put a little card in your program. Can you take that out of there? Just look at this little card. It's in your program. It's like that one right there. If you could take it out. And I wanted to sort of have some traction so, like, during the week you could kind of decide some things about your life. And here's the symbols. Is the plus means what should I, you know, what should I put into my life that isn't there now? Maybe it's more rest, time to reflect, dates with my wife, time with my children. Maybe it's just focusing on when it's time to do the timetable at night. Because here's what we say, I'll go to the next junior high band concert. Well, maybe it's okay to skip that, but I mean, you know, it's like, you know, what do you need to put in your life? And then the next one is, what do you need to take out of your life? And then what are you doing right now that you need to do less of? And what are you doing right now that you need to do more of? And it's just a card. You can just take it home this week and think about it and write this and look at it to try to make some movement in your life, how you spend your time so you don't have regrets.